Hey, what you're about to listen to is the podcast version of what was a live radio segment on KPFA. Consequently, when you hear us give out a call-in number, you don't want to call it. If you're listening to this as a podcast, it is already too late, and nobody on the other end of that phone number is going to have any useful answers for you. You can, however, send in a question for our next episode by shooting an email to upfront@kpfa.org. You can also tune in for the next edition live and ask your question over the phone then. We normally air Monday mornings on KPFA just after 7:30 news headlines. All right, let's go to this week's Corona Calls.
Good morning, Dr. Swartzberg.
Good morning.
Thank you so much for joining us. As always, we'll start the conversation and we'll be taking listener calls for questions about COVID science and public health in just a few minutes. So, John, last time we spoke was about 2 weeks ago. Like our conversation then, cases of COVID still seem to be growing. Vaccine access was at the center of our previous conversation, and I'm sure we'll continue, unfortunately, more from the political side than from science, because that's so heavy in the news. We'll start there. Last Monday, Susan Monterez entered a meeting with Health Secretary Robert F. Kennedy Jr., who asked for her resignation, citing concerns about insubordination and her integrity, including instances related to vaccine policy. Susan Monterez was the first Senate-confirmed Center for Disease Control director in history, confirmed less than a month prior to being asked to resign, which she refused to do. Since then, she has been fired, and numerous other officials at the CDC have resigned in protest. John, of course, the science of COVID is important, but a significant aspect of the science are the scientists and the people whose work it is to enable scientists to get their work done. What do you make of the situation at the CDC?
Well, it's chaos. To say it's very disturbing would be a marked understatement in terms of what's happened. And it's very dangerous. There's a complete consensus among all of my colleagues, among all of the scientists, physicians that I read their comments about, and amongst most of the political people that I hear about. This consensus is that RFK Jr. is a tremendous danger to the public's health. I can't say that more strongly. This is not a political issue. This is just an observation based upon his now just a touch over 200 days in office, culminated by what you were just relating, Jesse, in regards to the firing of the CDC director, because she demanded that she would follow what the science showed, what the data showed, as opposed to what Kennedy wanted. And he wanted also for her to fire key people in the CDC. And subsequently, four top people at the CDC also quit. So right now, the CDC is in chaos, all self-inflicted by RFK Jr. and his ilk. And the people who are going to primarily suffer are the American public. This is a real tragedy that's going on.
It is a real tragedy. Every time I've seen another round of news from the administration of RFK at the health area, I'm somehow surprised. I'm wondering if this news surprises you at this point when you saw this last week.
It's sort of like with the administration, where if somebody had said in 8 months of the administration we would see all the changes that have occurred, I couldn't have believed it. I would have been very surprised. In terms of what RFK Jr. has done in his 7 months, sure, I'm surprised. Nothing like this has ever happened, CDC has been around since 1946, and something like this has never occurred. The changes in the FDA in regards to vaccine policy, we have never seen anything like this before. So, yes, I'm surprised because I expected people to be reasonable and rational. I expected people to recognize that there are facts, they're not alternative facts. I expected people in responsible positions to not make policy based upon their feelings, but make policy on good data. And none of that has occurred. So yeah, I'm really surprised and very, very disappointed in the head of HHS, RFK Jr. And let's not forget that he was appointed by the president, and the president is ultimately responsible for all of this.
That's right. We'll continue the conversation in just a second. I want to remind listeners, we'll be taking calls for you to ask questions about COVID science and public health with Dr. Swartzberg in just a few minutes. The number to call is 1-800-958-9008. Again, that's 1-800-958-9008. I promise we're going to get to the science. The politics have been heavy this week. So I want to ask one more political question. This was on Monday, just yesterday. An op-ed by FDA Commissioner Marty Makary argued that drug makers haven't justified the need for people who are under 65 or who don't have certain health conditions to get access to vaccines. Later on Monday, yesterday, President Donald Trump demanded that drug companies release data related to vaccine success rates. What do we make of a demand to release data? And I'm wondering, are you aware of what kinds of data these drug companies create, track, and release in regard to their products? Has that information been held back?
I'm aware of all of the data that the drug companies submitted to the FDA. I'm aware of all of the data that the drug companies submitted for publication. And I've reviewed all of that data, and so have many, many physicians, epidemiologists, scientists. That data has been carefully, very carefully scrutinized. So I'm not aware if these drug companies have held any information back. I am confident that the data that has been submitted has been carefully vetted by independent groups before it's been published, carefully vetted by then the people in charge of the FDA, not the current people. So I'm very confident in that data. And let's remember that this data isn't only coming from the United States, but it's coming from multiple other countries that have also tested the vaccines for safety and efficacy. So I think that this feels to me at this point, 24 hours later, like a smokescreen that's being put up by the head of the FDA and by the president, suggesting that there's some nefarious plot that's going on by the pharmaceutical companies. And let's look at it from one other direction, and that direction is, have these vaccines been studied for safety? Yes, in hundreds of millions of people around the globe, and exquisitely carefully here in the United States. Have these vaccines been tested for efficacy? And the answer is yes, again, in hundreds of millions of people around the planet, and exquisitely carefully here in the United States. Mm-hmm. There's really no question about the efficacy of these vaccines, and there's really no question about their safety. When I say their safety, like anything, like a pill you might take that you buy over the counter, like aspirin or Tylenol, or the car you get into to drive, there's always a risk, but the risks of these vaccines are minuscule compared to their benefit. And lastly, and I'm sorry to go on about this, but I think it's very interesting to reflect on the fact that the administration via the FDA and the CDC is restricting who can get the vaccine based not upon data, not upon science, but they're restricting it based upon what they feel. This has not been publicly vetted. There's been no transparency at all in these decisions. So there's an irony here that an awful lot of people, understandably, were upset with vaccine mandates when the government said, you can't do this. You can't work without a vaccine at one point. Right now, what the government is saying is you can't have this unless you meet the criteria that we feel are correct. We feel are correct, as opposed to what the data shows. So that's the best I can do to answer your question, Jesse.
Thank you. John, I appreciate the answer. We're in trying political times, and it's a little bit outrageous, extremely outrageous, that the politics outweigh the science in when we're talking about public health. We already have three callers stacked up in queue. Before we get to them, I wanted to ask one question about actual COVID science. And I'm not sure if you've seen this research, but a recent study from the National Jewish Health Institute suggests that catching a common cold might provide short-term protection against COVID-19. The findings offer some suggestion around why children typically show fewer symptoms than adults. I know my school-age nieces and nephews are very, very frequently getting sick with colds. And so this research resonated with me. I've been fascinated by why kids are not as impacted by COVID. I'm wondering if you're aware of this research and what you make of it.
I am, and it's very intriguing. And on one level, not surprising at all. SARS-CoV-2 is the cause of COVID. It's a coronavirus. There are at least three other coronaviruses that cause the common cold. There may be cross-reactivity in terms of our immune system. When our immune system comes into contact with a coronaviral infection that causes the common cold, we develop immunity to that. Unfortunately, it's not permanent, but it gives us good immunity for a while. And there likely, or at least the study suggests, that there may be cross-reactivity so that when we encounter another coronavirus, but this time it's SARS-CoV-2, we may have some immunity to that. And so it may modify the illness, make it less serious, or it could even prevent it. So there's a biological plausibility for the findings in this study. There's also an indirect biological plausibility, and that is that I suspect many of your listeners may have had the same experience I've had. You have a cold, this long before COVID, you have a cold and you get over that. And it's very unusual to get a cold right after that. You can, but it's unusual. There seems to be some kind of protective immune response, or your immune system is heightened in terms of awareness of pathogens, and you have some transient protection there. So there may be a non-specific protection we get from having a respiratory tract infection, preventing a subsequent one for a short while. Or there may be a more direct protection in terms of generalized protection against all coronaviruses. And this would have, of course, implications for looking into or understanding better the immune response and perhaps even having better vaccines.
All right, Dr. John Swartzberg, we are going to go to the phone lines. We have some folks waiting to ask questions about COVID science and public health. We'll start with Sharon in San Francisco. Sharon, you are on the line.
Hello, good morning.
Good morning, Sharon. What's your question for Dr. Swartzberg?
My question is, we have historically received the Moderna vaccine since the start of COVID, We are unable to source Moderna. Our doctor says he can only find pharmacies that will give us Pfizer. Can you explain the pros and cons of switching to a different vaccine or continuing to try to find, in our case, Moderna, so we're sticking with the same vaccine? Thank you very much.
Thanks, Sharon, for that question. There is a good answer for that. We've been studying that your exact question since the beginning of the availability of vaccines. And they're just, the simple answer is that it does not seem to matter whether you get Moderna or Pfizer, what order you get them, or if you get all Moderna or all Pfizer, the immunity seems to be pretty comparable. So I would suggest getting whatever is available to you.
That's great advice. That's we've been hearing that for a minute. The vaccine recommendation from Dr. Swartzberg is get vaccines when you're able. We're going to move on to our next caller. If you want to join the conversation, ask a question to Dr. Swartzberg. The number to call is 1-800-958-9008. We'll go first to John in Fresno. John, you're on the line.
Taking my call. Good morning, Dr. Swartzberg, and thank you for your continuing effort. And I will say,
John, can you speak up a little bit on the line?
I'll try better. How's that?
That's much better. Thank you,
Doctor. How do you do now that we're 5 years into the COVID? Would you explain about testing the effects of seemingly unrelated changes in the body, right? If you have an effective vaccine for COVID, but how do we know there are not long-term good or bad effects that come out of this through the changes in our bodies?
All right. Thank you for your call, John.
Thank you, John. I understand your question to be that getting vaccines throughout the pandemic, is there any evidence for long-term positive or negative effects from that? And of course, we can't answer that empirically because we don't have long-term data. We have now 4 years of data on the vaccines, actually 4 years plus on the vaccines, not showing any long-term salutary effects beyond protection against COVID, and any long-term adverse effects. The observation about vaccines in general, that we have now data over 100 years on, and if you include smallpox, we have data going back since a little before 1800, that the adverse effects we see from vaccines occur very early after being vaccinated. The adverse effects of having one vaccine multiple times appear very early. I'm talking about usually within weeks, occasionally within a month or two, but rare beyond that. And certainly long-term effects of getting vaccinated and having problems 10 years or 12 years or 20 years later, we've not seen that. And biologically, there's really no biological plausibility for that. So that's a longish answer to your question, John, but as someone who's received every COVID vaccine and has received every vaccine that's been recommended to me over my lifetime, all I know is that I'm still healthy, fortunately. And all I know is that the vaccines we have good data on of the hundreds of millions of lives they've saved since they've been available, and the correlation of the advent of vaccines and longevity of the human lifespan. So I think that from every perspective we can look at, I don't have any concerns about the long-term effects. Unfortunately, I don't have any hope that there's something salutary that's going to come out 10 or 20 years later also.
Thank you, John, for that call, and Dr. John Swartzberg for your answer. Before we go to the next call, I wanted to bring in a question that we got over email. Again, if you are not able to make the phone call right now, you can always send us an email at coronacalls@kpfa.org. John, you previously discussed RFK's dismantling of the research of mRNA vaccines in the U.S. Wayne from San Mateo emailed to ask, will other countries like Europe, like countries in Europe, China, or Korea, take over this research and save us from the next coming pandemic by developing mRNA vaccines? In other words, if the U.S. doesn't take the lead on this research, what do we know about the resources put toward public health and science in research in other areas around the world? And might this just be a decentering of the U.S.?
That's a great question by Wayne. The one answer is yes, other countries are already picking up the slack from the United States. So other countries will be making the discoveries, not the United States, because of the administration's decision. The consequences of this are significant. First of all, it's important to remember that the United States was the leader by far in mRNA research. That's why we got it first here. That's why people standing in line in the United States in December of 2020 were the first people on the planet to be vaccinated on a regular basis. That is not going to occur if we are not the ones who are making the discoveries. It's going to occur in other countries, and the United States is going to have to stand in line like other countries do. Now, it shouldn't be this way. It should be any great discovery of anything from a science should be quickly disseminated around the world, but that's not the reality of this world right now. Mm-hmm. So that's one of the consequences of this. The other is to remember that the United States did the bulk of the research, and while other countries will pick this up, there's no country that will be able to do what the U.S. was doing. And it's not like standing in, when you stop the research, it's not like you can just immediately start it up again. That doesn't work that way. It doesn't work that way in an automobile manufacturing line. That's just not the way it works.
Yeah. Dr. Swartzberg, I want to try to get to one or two more callers in as rapid fire questions and rapid fire answers as we can possibly do, because we do have a handful of people waiting on the line to ask questions. Omawale, I'm going to go to you. Omawale is in Berkeley. Omawale, you're on the air. Let's go with as quick of a question.
Thank you.
As possible.
Good morning. Good to hear your voices, and I'm thankful for the program. Quick question. Where would I go to do extensive research on the variants of COV2? What I'm interested in is that we've been through the Greek alphabet from Alpha all the way to Omicron, multiple variants under each of those. And I was trying to figure out, is there one place?
There's Omawale, there's no one place. Start with the CDC site. That's been
okay.
It's a little bit delayed. There are a variety of other sites, and if you email me, I can certainly give them to you. These are independent sites that are looking at the research.
All right, and very quickly, Frida in Oakland, you are on the line. What's your question?
Yes, hi. My question is about long COVID and altered taste. Parosmia. I was wondering if you know if it gets better or not. It has been 4 months, and it's hard to eat things that you used to eat. And
all right, thank you, Frida.
It's really miserable. Yeah,
Frida, I'm sorry you have that. The good answer, the answer that you, I'm happy to tell you, is that most people, not everybody, but most people, their taste has fully returned by a year. In some people, it could be up to 2 years, and in a very small group of people, it seems to be longer.
All
than
right.
That.
Well, good luck with your taste coming back, Frida. We're going to have to end it there. Thank you, John, for joining us.
You're welcome. Thank you, Jesse.
All right, that does it for this week's edition of Corona Calls. If you want to send in a question for the next one, you can shoot an email anytime to upfront@kpfa.org, or you can tune in live. We normally broadcast Mondays just after 7:30 news headlines on KPFA. We put a little bit of extra work into repackaging this live segment as a podcast because it feels like the information is useful to a lot of people, and we ought to make it accessible through as many channels as possible. You can help us get the word out by rating and reviewing it in whatever app you're using to listen. And if you want to pitch in some cash, we wouldn't say no. We always take donations at kpfa.org. I appreciate it if you mentioned Corona Calls when you make your pledge. My name is Brian Edwards-Tiegert. I hope you have a great week. Stay well. We'll talk to you next time.